21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Hello, this is Stanley Krippner. I'm professor of psychology at Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco on behalf of 21st Century Radio, run by Dr. Bob Hieronymus. And I would certainly encourage listeners to stay tuned because you will hear things on 21st Century Radio that you'll hear nowhere else on the airwaves.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm the alleged Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD hanging out in this part of the universe, and there are times when I don't know which part I'm in. That's all there is to it, friends. And, of course, our executive producer and research assistant for about almost two decades now. Of course, our show's about 21 years old is Laura Corden. Our engineer is Jake Bryant. And you're listening to a group that I used to love listening to for years, the Supreme Angels. The Supreme Angels. There they go. Of course, our guest is Dr. Mark Cipher, transcending the speed of light, consciousness, quantum physics, and the fifth dimension, inner traditions. MarkCipher.com. That's spelled M-A-R-C, Cipher.com. Yes, my boss told me not to spell it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And, of course, we have just about 15 to 20 minutes to talk about some very important stuff. And I'd like to start with the link between ether, gravity, and electromagnetism.
Okay, so basically what I was saying is very simple. What ether is the medium between all the stars, and that the stars and the Earth, planets, they're absorbing ether all of the time. The reason that they're absorbing ether, I think, is to keep the elementary particles spinning. So electrons, we know that they spin. What keeps them spinning? I'm guessing that, I cite the sources, obviously, in the book, that they are absorbing ether all of the time and converting that ether into electromagnetism. So what we call gravity, really from the etheric point of view, is the absorption of ether by the elementary particles of the Earth. So that's really it.
Well, we talked a little bit about Einstein last segment, and you make the point that, why might Einstein's theories be incomplete and perhaps built on some flawed data? But combining that with, actually, I should have said, why is mainstream scientific community unwilling to take on Einstein in this particular area?
There's a few reasons. Einstein obviously was a genius. But Einstein himself, and I go into great depth, I mean, I've studied Einstein's work, and I've studied the biographies and a lot of what he said. One of the things that Einstein said, which is in Roland Clark's biography of Einstein said that if the ether can be detected, then his theory of relativity is wrong. Now, when you read what the etheric view of gravity is, it's what a G-force is. It's actually very easy to detect the ether. If you're in a car and you stop short, you feel the force of that movement, you're absorbing ether. And so there's a link between acceleration and gravity, which Einstein, in fact, did recognize. But where Einstein set himself up was, he said nothing could travel faster than the speed of light. But they were measuring electron spin. They were finding that electrons were indeed spinning faster than the speed of light. So what were they going to do? They didn't want to take Einstein on, so they changed that spin to the square root of -1 and Dirac did this, and he combined Einstein's theory of relativity with quantum mechanics, and he got a Nobel Prize. So they've got this whole this whole system giving a Nobel Prize to a guy for combining Einstein's theory with quantum mechanics, but the loss was the fact that someone had measured electron spin. It was traveling faster than the speed of light. Here's where Uspensky comes in. What Uspensky says is that what Einstein realized, what Einstein had come across was actually a new dimension. And so one of the things I discuss is how you get from one dimension to the next dimension. And it's actually very simple. If a dot is the zero dimension, and a dot moves out, you know, just moves out, it becomes a line. So a line is the first dimension. If a line moves perpendicular to itself, it creates a plane. That's the second dimension. So you have this concept of movement and at right angles. If the plane moves up at right angles, it creates a cube, which is the third dimension. And if a cube is moving through space, that's time. But you can draw a hypercube, which is a cube extending itself out. And so a hypercube, so there's actually two different dimensions which you could look at. One is time, the physical cube or the Earth moving through space. And another is that the space itself extending into what I'm calling inner space, or, which is, you know, the fifth dimension. So what Einstein came across, he said nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. What Uspensky is saying is, of course something can travel faster than the speed of light. What Einstein came across was another dimension. And so that other dimension is the mental realm. One of the things I talk about in the book is the very equation E equals MC squared. What about C squared? What the heck is C squared? And I discuss about, from the best of my ability, an attempt to try and explain what C squared is. It came from Leibniz's equation for force, F equals MV squared. Force equals mass times velocity squared. And so I make a simple argument. If force equals mass times velocity squared, if velocity squared has a physical counterpart, then if E equals MC squared, then C squared's got to have a physical counterpart as well. And it's square to the physical dimension. So that's another way of looking at what the next dimension is. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to say, let's accept what Einstein's saying, but let's realize that he's setting the stage for letting us understand that there is another dimension, and the threshold is the speed of light. And my argument is that our mind is already operating in a realm faster than the speed of light all the time.
Let's return to gravity just a second here. Gravity is, you say on page 107, universal compression of ether. Could you elaborate on this for me, please?
Yeah, what I did was, I think I have some contradictions in the book, and I think that that's a contradiction to what I was saying. And I put it in because that's what I had read that, and I see that as a contradiction to what I'm trying to argue. I don't totally understand what that means. But how I understand what gravity is, according to the etheric view, is that it's absorbing ether all the time, so that all of matter is sucking ether in, is an influx all the time. So when you jump up, you're in the way of this influx, you fall back down. Now, that universal compression came from Tesla's work, and I put it in for historical reasons. There might be someone that could understand it, but I didn't want to leave it out because he used that concept. But I didn't. I don't understand it. What I do understand is the other way of looking at ether.
Well, thank you. Thank you for explaining that, because I was a little confused. Dark matter or dark energy, there are books upon books coming out on this now. How might it be related to ether?
Here's what I think. There's a few things I wanted to say about that. I wrote an article in 1979 called The Universe is a Hologram. To me, it's self-evident. And a lot of what I'm saying, I think, is self-evident, like the Royal Rife stuff. Let's say you take a Hubble telescope and put it on, you know, it's circling the Earth, and you get a map of the universe. Suppose you move that Hubble telescope to circle the planet Jupiter. You'll get a map of the universe. You could put the Hubble telescope any place in the universe, and you will get a map of the whole universe. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so every point in space contains the intersecting light from every star. Wherever you go, you're going to see millions and millions and millions of stars. So that's a holographic model for the universe. So the universe is set up on a holographic model, and at every point in space, you have the intersecting light from every star. That, to me, is self-evident. Now, what is dark matter? I think what happened is it's semantics. They meant the term dark meant you couldn't see it. We can't see space. We can't. If I look out from here to the sun, I don't see the space in between the sun. I don't see the air. We don't call air dark. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. They made a mistake. They called it dark matter. It's like saying dark air, because you can't see it. They should have said invisible matter. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yes, I do. Yes, I
okay,
do.
So my argument is that what dark matter really is light. It's light energy. Mm-hmm. And that the universe is filled with light. You can't go any place in the universe and not be at a point where you have the intersecting light from every star in the universe. I think it's self-evident. So what I'm saying, dark matter, is it's really light energy. And another thing I'm saying is that Planck's constant is a little quantum of energy. I'm saying that photons have mass. So they're saying, well, the missing matter. Yeah, all the photons that have been produced for, you know, 14 billion years that's spreading out all over the universe has a teeny bit of weight to it. And that's what the missing energy is. So it's a semantic problem. They should have called it light energy instead of dark energy. They meant invisible energy. So what I think it is, it's simply light.
Well, how might, you know, Tesla, an extraordinary soul, there, you mentioned one of the earlier theories or some people feeling that he came from another planet. But how might have Tesla developed super-sensitive abilities?
I think that this is an interesting idea, this concept of an avatar and revelation. I believe that there are higher states of consciousness. And as you stated in the beginning of your show, we're not alone. We cannot be the smartest thing in the universe. There has to be other intelligences more intelligent than us. And we are, in a sense, instruments of higher intelligent forces. What Gurdjieff talks about, it. What's the point of humans? And one of the points is to help, you know, the cosmos evolve. So certain people do things, and they are actually instruments of a higher purpose. I think Kubrick, when he made, you know, 2001 with Arthur Clarke, it served a higher purpose. I also think Spielberg, he doesn't realize it, but E.T. is a revelation. It's like a biblical tale. It's energy from a higher state. And there are certain people, I put Edison right up there with Tesla, but that these people come to the Earth, and they are instruments of higher powers. What Tesla saw himself, which is so interesting, he didn't see himself as an inventor. He saw himself as a discoverer. And I'll give you an example. We could have never invented the airplane if birds didn't fly. All of our inventions come from studying nature, studying a higher conscious force, which is the producer of life. So some people are more in touch with expressing this higher process, and sometimes it can be through artistic achievement. And in Tesla's case, it was through creative invention. So that's really the idea. So the idea of him being, you know, coming from another planet, I think in some spiritual sense, in a way, he was. He was tapped into this higher energy, and he was expressing it on the Earth, and we needed him at that time.
Well, too bad that some of the most important work has not been followed through, and so much of his work has been destroyed as well. But that seems to be the way of the status quo. And boy, we heard, I couldn't believe what we heard just before the end of last hour, saying that something was wrong with the status quo, or let's not follow that. I've forgotten exactly what it was years ago. I don't think I'd ever would have heard that on the radio. How might a person's mind be a microcosm of the universe?
Well, I think that what is consciousness? I like the idea of mandala. And when Moses, you know, sees the burning bush, which is God, God tells Moses his name, I am that I am. So the name of God is I am. And from Rudolf Steiner's work, he gets into the very word I. I can say you did this, or Bob did that, or this fellow did that, or that guy did that, but I can't say I for you. I could say Bob did this, or you did this, but I can't say I did this, meaning it's you. So I is a very special word, but I gives you an identity with the great I am in the sky. We're all linked to the Godhead, to the I am. So I like the model of a mandala with God in the center, the big I am in the center, and we're all spokes off the wheel. So when they ask Jesus, are you the Son of God? He says, I am, as we all are. We are all sons or daughters of God. We're all chips off the old block. So I think my consciousness and your consciousness, everybody's consciousness, is a little piece of the giant consciousness. We each have our own, what Leibniz called, the monad. And so that, I think, is the link, why we're a microcosm of the macrocosm, meaning the conscious force that created all this. We each have a piece of, a little chip of that.
Well, also, there's a, oh gosh, there's so many other sections in this book we haven't touched, but would you please, for our final question, discuss Darwin's theory of random mutation versus the Aristotelian view that the universe is purposeful. What does, and also what does the word teleology mean?
Well, Darwin said that life evolves through chance mutation and survival of the fittest. So the giraffe with the longer neck survive and the ones with the shorter necks die out. In the case of the cheetah, the slow cheetahs die out and the fast ones survive. But it's all based on chance. What Darwin is missing is the élan vital, is the vital life force inside that forces this giraffe to want to have a longer neck or the cheetah to run faster. The word teleology means that the end is implied in the beginning, and Aristotle talks about this. So if we have an acorn, already inside that acorn is a 40-foot oak tree at some point in the future. It's already built into the acorn. And so what Darwin is missing is that built inside of every one of us is a plan for the distant future. So evolution, what Gurdjieff would be called, he's calling it involution, that there's help from above. So it's not just Darwin's theory that we are becoming more and more complex, trying to adapt to the environment, but there's also help from above. There's an inner force propelling us forward, and that's what's missing from Darwin's theory, the inner force, the directionality, first cause, the conscious force that created it all.
Well, Mark, is there anything that we haven't covered? There's a lot we haven't covered, but that you would like to relate in the few minutes we have left?
I would like to say that I end the book, you know, with a lot of discussion of astrology. I do Bill Clinton's chart. I have Einstein's chart, Adolf Hitler's chart, and Freud's chart. And one of the things I'm making an argument for is if Johann Kepler, if Isaac Newton, if Galileo, Copernicus, if all these great people studied astrology, why are we so arrogant to think that they were, you know, they were brilliant in this one realm, but they were dumb in this other realm? Maybe there really is something to astrology. And I talk about Gocklin's book, Cosmic Clocks, where he did 20,000 horoscopes, and he found out that there is a link between Mars and you know, warriors and Jupiter and politicians and all of this, that there's something there. But what is he really saying? We are a product of the solar system, and that solar system is imbued in us. Anybody with a telescope, that's what I would like to tell your listeners, is if they've never seen Saturn through a telescope or Jupiter with a telescope, you have to do this. You just have to do this. And you'll see how close they really are. You can see the moons of Jupiter. You can see the ring of Saturn, and it's so close. I mean, so it is all influencing us. So I would like to make a case that we should rethink about astrology in the sense that we are a product of this conscious universe, and there are some big secrets there, and we had some great giants that studied it in our past, and we should be respectful of them.
Well, I agree, especially Michael, Mr. Gulquillan, and some of the tragic ends of so many individuals that discussed astrology, especially within the, gosh, with the, I'm trying to, did he commit suicide?
I don't know.
Was it Gulquillan?
I don't know, but look what they did to Nancy Reagan, you know?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. But the reason why I especially felt poorly for the work of Gulquillan is because most of the people that tore it apart obviously didn't read his work, didn't understand his work.
Yeah.
And this happens so many times in so many areas that it seems like within academia sometimes there's a good deal of fear concerning things that they know very little about but will attack.
You know, they have a quote in the book. I have the guy's name, but I can't think of his name. But it was, a wise man follows the stars, a fool is ruled by them. There is a tremendous amount of wisdom in that statement.
I agree. Well, thank you for joining us, Mark. The book is Transcending the Speed of Light, Consciousness, Quantum Physics, and the Fifth Dimension. You remember the Fifth Dimension as a group?
Yes, I love that song.
Wouldn't they something? Yeah. And
I'm an Aquarian, too.
You're an Aquarian. No wonder you'd like that song. By the way, did you go to Woodstock?
Yes, I did.
Did you have a good time?
It was a mind-blowing experience.
I bet you it was.
A life-changing experience.
Thank you very much, Mark, for joining us. I hope you can join us again sometime.
Thank you.
Again, the book is Transcending the Speed of Light, Consciousness, Quantum Physics, and the Fifth Dimension. It's by Inner Traditions International, and you can call them. I lost that telephone number. I'll have to give it back. I'll give it to you again as we return next hour. And next hour, it's UFOs, is it not? Yes, it is. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. She's right. It's only in a few minutes. See you soon.
WCBM listeners, do you have a plan B? Hi, I'm Tim Porterfield. Up until last spring, I was an executive earning a comfortable six-figure salary. Imagine my shock and surprise when I was suddenly downsized in April of 07. Fortunately, I joined the club mastermind and was buying, fixing, and selling houses for additional income. When one door closed, another one opened. I bought and sold five houses last year and earned paydays of up to $22,000. In 2008, I plan to do twice as many deals. You can find out more about the club at a free seminar happening this month.
Save these dates. Free real estate education seminar, Tuesday evening, June 16th at 6:30 p.m. And free real estate investor help day, Saturday, June 20th, 10 to 2. On the net at info@theclubmastermind.com or call 1-800-675-1724, extension 2. On the net at info@theclubmastermind.com or call 1-800-675-1724. Extension 2.
Did you know that over 50% of adults have had to deal with toenail fungus? It may be ugly and embarrassing, but it's not surprising because it's easy to catch. It thrives in wet environments such as nail salons and locker rooms, and people will do just about anything to hide it. Hi, I'm Dr. Mark Speer, a podiatrist with over 25 years' experience right here in Baltimore. Until recently, the only way to deal with this toenail problem was with a pill that could cause some serious side effects or with topicals that didn't really work. Well, no more. I'm proud to be the first podiatrist in Maryland to offer the Pinpoint Foot Laser. As seen on Good Morning America, with only one painless treatment in less than 40 minutes, I can treat the fungus with no side effects, enabling your completely healthy toenail to grow out normally in 6 to 9 months. If you've been suffering from toenail fungus, call me, Dr. Mark Speer, that's S-P-I-E-R, for a free consultation at 410-833-0040. That's 410-833-0040. There is a better way.
The views and opinions of the guests and hosts you hear are not necessarily those of the owners, management, or advertisers of Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
Abracadabra. Make Professor Paul H. Trattner appear at your next event. As a professed artist of legerdemain, he will amaze, amuse, and astound you and your guests with his magical entertainment and subtle humor. For more information, visit his website at www.professortratner.com or call the magic number 410-664-6240. That's 410-664-6240.
No matter who we are or what we do, our health is a priority. To stay well or to recover from an illness or injury, consider using options that are safe, natural, and in some cases, thousands of years old. From acupuncture to modern-day massage, counseling, and homeopathic medicine, the Ruscomb Mansions Community Health Center offers children and adults numerous health care and support services. Find out more about the Ruscomb Mansions yoga classes and weekend programs. Call 410-367-7300. That's 367-7300.
Hello, this is Edgar Evans Casey, the son of Edgar Casey, the famous psychic. This is 21st Century Radio, and I'm speaking with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Oh, it's always nice to hear from Edgar Evans Casey. And that funny music we always have back there, huh? Well, you know, I always look forward to our next guest, and not just because he gives us the most exciting and comprehensive UFO news happening around the globe, but mostly because he has such a great sense of humor, and talking to him always lifts my spirits. It's time for my good friend Peter Robbins, the level-headed reporter and one of the chief investigators of the famous Bentwaters Edgewood Air Force Base UFO encounter in England, if you're back in the old days. Peter Robbins has written and lectured extensively on the subject of UFOs and government conspiracy for more than 30 years and has appeared on or been a consultant to numerous television and radio shows both in the States and abroad. He has been traveling extensively these past few years, speaking and organizing various UFO conferences, and keeping his finger on the pulse of the latest announcements, sightings, and disclosure events. He is currently serving as public relations representative to the city of Roswell, New Mexico, and is joining us tonight to preview the annual July UFO Festival, or to be more accurate, that would be festivals with an S, as well as what's new in UFO news around the world. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Peter.
Hi, Dr. Bob. Good to be back.
You're partying pretty hard over there?
Not too much to party around here in the countryside, but I'm getting a fair amount of work done.
That's the same thing, isn't it? Well, that's one of the things that I love about anything about learning is, it, as a matter of fact, it's more fun than anything I've ever done.
You know, well said.
Now, let's head straight to Roswell so you can tell us about the lineup of speakers at the Roswell UFO Festival July 2nd through 5th. But first, please clarify this plurality of festivals for me. I'm seeing three different festivals promoted on your website, RoswellUFOFestival.com. Is that correct?
Yes and no. In Roswell, as part of its UFO Festival, which spans from July 2nd through Sunday the 5th, starts Thursday morning, and of course covers the 4th of July weekend, there are three separate conferences going on in the city of Roswell. The one that I'm associated with is organized by MUFON this year, which is a first, and they will be overseeing it. It will run for several days, and it will be basically up against two other conferences. One that the museum, which specifically is the International UFO Museum and Research Center in beautiful downtown Roswell, they always have their own conference and their own series of speakers and their own special events and guests. And then there will be a third conference, which is called...
The Ancient of Days Christian
Symposium. The Ancient of Days, yes. That phrase always escapes me. And it is a fundamentalist Christian UFO conference. So the first should be flying in that part of New Mexico for several days, and I expect quite a number of street fights, you know, between the oppositions, and a lot of blood should flow, yeah.
Well, then we better go. Come on, let's see. Nothing like watching a bunch of aliens getting and defending them one way or the other.
Now, it's going to be quite a series of events, and as you know, I work with the city, and this year's conference is sensational. If there was absolutely nothing else going on, it would be worth coming out for it. I'll give you an idea. We have Jesse Marcel Jr.
Uh-huh.
And if you've never heard Jesse, of course, his father is one of the best-known people in UFO lore and legend and reality. Jesse Marcel Sr. was the base intelligence officer on the old Roswell base in the summer of 1947. And Senior, Jesse's dad, went through the extraordinary international humiliation of first being told by the base commander that a flying saucer had crashed and to alert the media, which he did. This was not cleared with the Pentagon, and so within a few hours things went a little crazy in Washington, and the next day he had to pose with part of an old Mogul weather balloon. And it was reset in the position that the crash debris had been the previous day. And that stayed with him for the rest of his life and was, I think, hauntingly and beautifully captured in Paul David's memorable film Roswell, where the actor Kyle MacLachlan plays Jesse Sr. And we will also have Paul there showing that movie with Jesse Jr. right there to comment on it after. We are bringing in Nick Pope from London, one of our favorite people in the international UFO scene, to give us the latest updates on Her Majesty's government's continuing declassification of UFO-related documents. And Travis Walton will be making a very rare appearance. Of course, again, Travis is as legendary as Jesse Marcel. He was the subject of an extraordinarily multiply witnessed abduction near Snowflake, Arizona in the 70s, was missing for almost a week, and his story was also the subject of a remarkable film called Fire in the Sky with D.B. Sweeney and James Garner. And Travis will be there also with his film. Richard M. Dolan, another one of our leading spokespeople in the field, will be talking about his new book, which is threatening to come out imminently. That is UFOs in the National Security State, Part 2, which many of us have been looking forward to for years.
I'll say.
One of my favorite Canadians in the field will be joining us this year, and that is Mr. Grant Cameron. Grant's specialty for anybody that's ever heard his amazingly compelling talks is presidents and the UFO story. And you can always check out the latest at his website, presidentialufo.com. So he will be specifically talking about Obama and UFOs, and a subject that obviously we're all very curious to know how he will lean toward, if he leans at all. Rich Dolan's wife, Karen, is, for me, one of the more noteworthy up-and-comers in the field the last few years, and she has kind of carved off and pioneered an area of study and research that has been much too long neglected, namely the impact that UFO and alien imagery and the subject in general have on children. She has been developing this topic in a number of ways, and she'll be joining a cadre of our speakers who are going to be doing something fairly new. We call it UFO 101, and running in tandem with the regular UFO conference, we're going to have some of the best people in the field. Nick also will be participating in this, giving UFO talks and seminars to absolute beginners, folks who maybe are just interested in the subject or never been to a UFO talk. Nobody will be talked down to, but it will qualify them in a sense to get more involved in the work in general. Another first for us is James Cameron, who is the international director of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, which is, we know, is the largest UFO investigative organization, I believe, in the world, but certainly in America. And James is going to be talking about new avenues of research in ufology. Paula Harris will be returning. She was a speaker last year, and she's going to be talking, adding more to our knowledge about the Philip J. Corso story. Corso, of course, is a former military man, now deceased, responsible for a book that came out in 97 called The Day After Roswell, and discusses his allegations of farming out material from the crash to various corporations and moving forward in creating our digital revolution. I still consider this very controversial. I have not made up my mind yet, but Paula knows more about this and has spent more time with Corso than anybody that I know. So I'll be lucky enough to be hearing all these talks pretty much because I'll be emceeing the conference. A local Roswell scholar, Dr. Donald Burleson, who is, for me, one of our most valuable, lesser-known people. He's the MUFON State Director for New Mexico, and author of probably a dozen books, some of them very slim, but all of them interesting. And he is going to be talking about his latest book, UFO Secrecy and the Fall of J. Robert Oppenheimer, who, of course, was one of the prime movers in the Manhattan Project and the development of nuclear weaponry in this country. Clifford Stone, another retired military man, is going to be talking about UFO crash retrievals. The unique brother and sister research team, Debbie Ziegelmeyer and Chuck Zukowski, who are very involved in the field, and I mean that literally, as well as good researchers, we'll be giving some updates on Roswell and also conducting a Roswell 101 lecture. Another local, Dennis Balthazar, who has carved out his own niche in UFO studies. He wrote for me for years when I was running UFOcity.com in the old days. And I'm glad that he is now lending some of his very fine research skills to those of that handful of people that research underground bases and what is going on below the surface of the Earth, manufactured and otherwise. And his talk is called Underground Bases and Tunnels.
Oh, that's great. I love those.
Alejandro Rojas will be doing a 101 presentation. And Alejandro, besides being a really nice guy, is in the unique position of being MUFON's Director of Public Education. And he's the man that interfaces with the media for that august UFO organization. So he will be giving us some background on what his experience is like from where he sits and his thoughts on where things are going in the future in terms of media coverage and hopefully taking our subject more seriously in the future. The speaker who I'm least familiar with in the lineup is a gentleman named Dr. Claude Swanson, and he is a physicist who will be discussing complex physics aspects of UFO studies relating to space and time. That one I think I may have to take notes on. And I'll be going in armed with a talk or two in case one of our speakers is abducted by aliens or unable to attend for a more conventional reason and ready to jump in. But
what have you prepared? What have you prepared? Just in case.
I am going in with two talks. The one that would be the one that I would defer to if necessary is a talk called UFO and Alien Imagery in Advertising. Mm-hmm. And this was a bug in my bonnet for years, Bob. I know you too, and a lot of your listeners, when you're thumbing through a publication and you see an ad with an alien or a UFO-related theme, we sometimes contemplate whether or not there was, I don't know, a little encouragement to help normalize the picture. Certain folks in the field have theorized that main players in the advertising industry, as well as major media, have been brought in discreetly to awareness of classified aspects of this and have been encouraged by forces that be within officialdom to put forward more UFO-related imagery, information, allegories, what have you. I ended up looking at 60 different print images from several countries, from the most modest weekly giveaway newspaper in a small town for a mom-and-pop ice cream store, to extremely sophisticated ads for major multinational, highly technological corporations. And I also worked with a series of ads from television, from here, from South America, from England. And what I was looking for was to see if I could come up with a common theme that might give us some insight. Again, this is all educated guessing because there's no way to know for sure. But I think that I was able to find a thread that runs through advertising that we've seen for decades now that employs these images in their themes and make some conclusions about it. So it's a very densely illustrated presentation reflecting on all these ads, breaking them down into the ones that are referential to abduction or crash retrievals or recovered technology, or very lighthearted imagery, almost cartoon-like, aimed at children to sell them breakfast food. One thing is for sure, UFOs sell space very well in print publications, on television, and I don't think it's ever going to stop, no matter what the impetus is behind this advertising.
I understand there might be the possibility of Dr. Edgar Mitchell coming.
We're keeping our fingers crossed on that. Although Dr. Mitchell, who of course is one of our most distinguished retired astronauts, and as I recall, was the sixth man to walk on the moon, and one of those rare presences who does not seem to get himself attached to the ridicule factor usually associated with UFOs and takes the subject seriously, Dr. Mitchell grew up in Roswell, New Mexico.
Holy heavens, I forgot that.
You can't make this stuff up, him and Demi Moore.
Oh,
not that I'm drawing any parallels here. John Denver as well, I think. But he was 12 years old when it happened, and of course it made an impression on him. And I have been in contact with him, and needless to say, the city would love for him to be part of this event. And he is considering driving in with his brother, who lives in Albuquerque. And if you're listening, Dr. Mitchell, I'm doing everything I can to resist contacting you and saying, have you decided? But just sending wonderful thoughts to you every day about how well you will be treated and carried around on people's shoulders and, you know, fed great food and have the adulation of the crowd.
He
is one of my heroes, I have to say. I think he's a giant and somebody who will contribute greatly with his presence. So we're keeping our fingers crossed on that.
Well, he was Apollo 14, wasn't he?
I think he was 14.
And that's where...
Have you ever heard him speak, Bob?
Oh, sure. He's been on 21st Century Radio and a number of times.
My
first contact with him was back in 1970, something when, you know, he conducted those ESP experiments.
Yes.
And my uncle, Thomas Galen Hieronymus, spent a great deal of time studying those particular experiments and published a few papers on them. Well, hey, we got to take a break here.
Okay,
we're going to take a break. Our guest is Peter Robbins, Roswell UFO Festival. He's the MC, and he's also the panel discussion moderator. So if they get out of hand, he's pretty tough. I've seen him knock down 350-pound guys with baby fingers. July 3rd and 4th, RoswellUFOFestival.com for information on all three of those festivals. But this is going to be the best, mainly because these are the best UFO researchers on planet Earth. We'll be back in just about 18 seconds.
Hi, this is Frank Luber. Hey, don't tell Stephen Schock of Timonium about the sagging economy or unemployment. He's now making more money than ever by buying and renting homes through Real Estate Riches.
Prices are good. Interest rates aren't bad. You're going to have a lot of people here in the future that are going to be looking to rent because it's going to be tougher to get home loans. The time is ideal.
But Stephen, how do you know what's the right deal?
If you get out there and you work the program the way they tell you to do it, it works. The only way that you're going to fail is if you try and change it.
And in 1 year, working a few hours a week, you've made how much?
Well, it's over $60,000.
You, too, can learn more at the next Real Estate Riches free seminar by calling 443-631-3728. That's 443-631-3728, or go to realestateriches.com. $60,000 a year, a few hours a week?
It's a little bit too easy.
I'll say.
AT&T GoPhone has no annual contract and unlimited calling nationwide on the wireless network you can trust. Begging the question, why get unlimited calling on a limited network?
All right, huddle up. Williams, you're going long.
I don't think so.
We got to get in the end zone.
Look, if I go past the line of scrimmage, my prepaid phone coverage area ends.
So?
So I'm expecting a very important call about a very important post-game party. You dig?
Huh?
I like to party.
Tiny!
Yeah?
You're going long.
But my knee.
Do it!
It's all right.
My man, Tiny.
Don't compromise. Get unlimited calling nationwide on the network you can trust. AT&T GoPhone. Just $3 a day on the days you use it with no annual contract.
AT&T GoPhone. Available on cool phones like the Samsung A177. Call 1-800-GO-PHONE or visit att.com/GoPhone. AT&T. Your world delivered.
For network details, visit att.com/PAYGO details. Services not available at all times or in all areas. Unlimited voice services are provided solely for live dialogue between two individuals. Some restrictions apply. See store for details.
It's Baltimore's number one marketplace on the air. Radio Flea Market with Jay Harris. Heard every Sunday morning from 6:30 a.m. until 8. Only on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, if you buy one Woodstock 40th Anniversary commemorative book this summer, it should be the one we talk about this Sunday night. Memories from Woodstock attendees and performers of the greatest peaceful event in history. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at theSellingWell.com. That's theSellingWell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit theSellingWell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com. How would you like to win a free 21st Century Radio library of books, magazines, and other stuff, including the book, Left at East Gate, a first-hand account of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, its cover-up and investigation by Larry Warren, and our guest this hour, Peter Robbins, courtesy of Cosimo On Demand. If you can answer this question, you might be able to take home that entire library. Who was our final guest on 21st Century Radio last week? Tell us the name of our last guest on 21st Century Radio, and you'll be our winner. But you need to qualify. Here's how to do it. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
This is Paul Davids, producer-director of Jesus in India, the movie. You are listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. And visit me at JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com.
You're listening to Peter's late sister, Helen Wheels, Break the Chains. Oh, by the way, we invite you to join Meg Bowen, one of our Hieronymus & Company producers, as she performs her poetry and music this month on June the 24th, 7 p.m. poetry reading at Borders Bookstore in Lutherville, Maryland, for the Ransom Note Poets and the Blind Lady Press poetry reading. Free for all ages. Saturday, June 27th, Meg will be performing her original music from her CD, Facing My Shadows, along with crowd favorites from the 1960s to the present. Meg is the host of Shamrock Songwriters Showcase, and the lineup also includes acoustic cosmic duo of Mike Perry and Brandon Feltz, called Sponsored by Poverty, soon to be on Broadway in New York. They will rock your funny bone, plus Tim Kaye, a gothic jazz artist with piano playing and high-flying entertainment. Visit Meg Bowen's website at myspace.com/writerbyu. For more information on her performances, June 24th at Borders in Lutherville, June 27th at the Shamrock in Blair, as they say, in Balmer. Okay, our guest is Peter Robbins, Roswell UFO Festival MC and panel discussion moderator, July 3rd through 4th. Go to RoswellUFOFestival.com. And in addition to three different speaker symposiums at Roswell over the 4th of July weekend, there are dozens of other events that are planned. Many of them are ultra-friendly to families with kids. What would you like to mention beyond all the talky-talk that would be fun for families and kids?
Great question. The fact that whatever crashed outside of Roswell crashed in early July, the festival is always caught up with the 4th of July. So there's a huge 4th of July parade, which is half old-fashioned traditional parade and half not at all old-fashioned traditional parade, with lots of aliens and extremely unusual things rolling down the main drive there. There are costume contests. There are events at their planetarium. There's going to be a major rock concert featuring the Jefferson Starship, Country Joe and the Fish, one or two members of the original Grateful Dead. It will be Woodstock all over again. The night of the 3rd of July, there'll be a huge fireworks display followed by Motown legend Richard Street's Temptations. Richard is the only one left from the originals, and this is free to the public. Can you believe?
That's some
Motor City in New Mexico.
Country Joe and Hank Williams Jr., is that possible?
No.
Holy God.
About strange bedfellow. Well, I understand the scuttlebutt is, although politically these gentlemen are at extremes, Hank Williams Jr. is so interested in the subject of UFOs that, being a good conservative, he's willing to sit down with progressives and liberals and just have a good time. At least that's what I'm hoping. We're also going to be doing a stage reading of a very important play, Bob, called Top Secret Magic. It's written by a very distinguished New York playwright named Marty Martin. I've seen his work in New York, and it's the only play I'm aware of that tackles the subject of the summer of 1947 and goes back and forth between Washington and Roswell. And I think it's going to be a very moving experience. It'll be free to the public. And if it goes well, it might join the movie Roswell in becoming something of an annual event. But again, there's going to be so much going on there. And it is a lovely little American city. The prices are reasonable. The people are friendly. It helps support their local community. And for me, that is at least as important as the reason that we're going there to learn more about this compelling subject, that this is a chance to, again, help support a local American community. And it's why I've kind of modified my old, rather snooty view of the idea of a UFO festival. Many of my colleagues maintain that the subject is too serious to apply it to such a lighthearted way of seeing it. But again, McMinnville, Oregon, where I was just a few weeks ago, just had their 10th UFO festival and conference. It was a wonderful success, equally schizophrenic in the best sense of the word, a terrific, serious, well-attended research conference, and an awful lot of fun. And a little new information for you here, and as we get closer to the date, we'll cover it in a bit more detail. The town of Exeter, New Hampshire, very famous in great part because of the late John Fuller's fine book called Incident at Exeter, marking a remarkable series of UFO events in that area, this September will be having its first UFO conference and festival. And I'm working away with their city government and Kathy Martin, who is the niece of Betty Hill.
Well,
possibly
Kathy Martin.
One of the best-known UFO abductees in the world. And Kathleen has really begun to make a real spot for herself in UFO studies. And you may be aware or have read the book that she wrote with Stan Friedman about 2 years ago called Captured, the Betty Hill UFO Experience. And she and Stan, I understand, are now working in partnership on another book. And she is a terrific presenter. The second half of this year will have me all over the place. And all the more reason, I'm hoping that I can pay somebody off to, you know, be a guest again in the not-too-distant future. Who do I have to send that check to?
Oh,
it's not a check. It's got to be, oh, right, the unnumbered, the unsequentially numbered old $20 bills. Right.
Yeah,
I forget.
Whole roll of them, please. I'd like to, like back in the 1950s, all cowboys would stick a hand in her pocket and bring out a wad of cash. That, you know, that's the way.
Yeah.
If there were, we have almost out of time, but if there were one important UFO event that happened in this past year, what would have been?
A series of overflights in England. There have been, of course, sightings throughout the states. They just never seem to stop. I have to almost beg ignorance because I've had my nose so deeply into my computer screen the past couple of months working on papers for the second half of this year that I'm not as well-informed as I should be on the specifics of the myriad of events that we can cover, but I promise to have done my homework on that for our next show.
Good going. Okay, I won't arrest you tonight. Peter, Uncle Peter, thanks again for joining us. One of these days, I'm going to get out there if I can ever change my schedule to some kind of normal experience, but I'm kind of abnormal.
I was going to say, the word normal doesn't usually enter into your lexicon, but you would be a most honored guest, and you'd have an awful lot of fun, and bring your wonderful producer with you.
Well, thank you very much. And guests, friends, of course, this is the Roswell UFO Festival, July 3rd through 4th. Go to RoswellUFOFestival.com. Thank you ever so much, Uncle Peter.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News, I'm Brad Wheelis. Protest outside the Washington office.